And now, live from New York City via Los Angeles, California, it's time for The View from Over Here with the man who has a view for all seasons, your host, Stan Weisleder.
Hey there, everybody. This is Stan Weisleder on CRN.talk. I'm in the studio with Malcolm Berman, our special guests and regular guests, Robert Hooks and Lori Marlowe. But before we get to them, we have to do the news for the week. Number one, and this is straight from the horse's mouth. The horse's mouth in this instance is President Obama and Mayor Bill de Blasio of New York City. And you have to remember, you heard it here first. Rootin' Tootin' Putin, the guy from Moscow, has made it official. They want to annex Brighton Beach, otherwise known as Little Odessa, because of all of the Russians living there. The plebiscite will take place after the first of the year under UN supervision. And remember, you heard it here first.
Actually, it's called Odessa by the Sea, because it's right on the ocean.
Whatever, Malcolm. Donald T. Sterling, the owner of the plantation, has been touting and bragging for years how many millions he contributes to various charities. It now turns out that most of his claims cannot be documented. Oh, well. Donald Trump is happy that this Donald is now in the spotlight and that henceforth Sterling will now be referred to as the Donald. And remember, you heard it here first. There was a brief article in the LA Times about bullies and what the city of Carson is doing about it. Good for them. But they still fail to take into account the reasons why we have bullies. From my experience, such as it is, bullies generally learn from their parents, usually the father. This is not something that they learn in the womb or uterus. What do you say to that, Malcolm? Nothing? Okay.
Too much detail.
Specialist. It's pedophiles and child molesters in Hollywood. You think? There's been a lot of talk going around for years, but no one wanted to step forward. No one wanted to say, hey, they did me when I was a kid. It's about time and long overdue. All I can say is that I spent 23 years with the L.A. Sheriff's Department as a reserve deputy working as a detective assigned to child abuse and special victims. And I have to tell you that the abuse of children crosses all economic, racial, and ethnic lines. And what you read about in the paper or see on TV, unfortunately, is only the tip of the iceberg.
Well, they've always talked about the casting couch, but never the casting couch, you know, being under 16.
It applies to everyone, not just females, right, that, you know, look nice and so forth. It's everybody, even old grandmothers, I think, whatever. Anyway, we have our first guest ready to come on.
Yes, she is. Rita McKenzie. Rita, are you on the phone? Are you there? Uh-oh. I think she hung up.
Or Paul's.
Paul, could you please...
Anyway, we have our special guests today, Robert Hooks and Lori Marlowe, and they're going to talk about whatever they want to talk about.
That's the dream.
Well, I have you listed now as correspondence.
Okay, ooh. Correspondence is fine.
Right, so, you know, you have your own head. You are in the industry. You know what's happening.
Yeah, we are, you know, we're basically in the scheme of the Hollywood machine, and we actually today, you know, the Entertainment Matters would like to really basically discuss casting, discuss how Hollywood casts films, and what happens to the actors that win Academy Awards, especially the black actors who win Academy Awards, and then what happens to them. After they become celebrities holding golden Oscars, and unfortunately not being able to get the kind of roles that that they should be getting, having the gold in hand, so to speak. Lori, what's going on? Why is Hollywood, after you win an Academy Award, isn't that supposed to be the ultimate?
Well, the lightning rod for this whole discussion, and it's happening in the media, there was an article in Entertainment Weekly, Black Stars, White Ceiling, is Lupita Nyong'o. No winner, male or female, has become the it person, has triumphed throughout the award season, not just as far as the winning, but as far as the red carpet, the embrace, the celebrity, the adulation. And yet the discussion is still, will she work? You know, people at the producer and columnist column saying, but who will write a black role for her?
So, Lori, it's not necessarily discrimination, but what is the next role for that particular person?
Well, what I wanted to bring up, and, I mean, Robert is on another echelon when it comes to acting and being cast. He gets respect. But for the workaday actor, the mindset in the industry is actors don't know what the roles are. There is a guy named Gary Marsh who has something called the breakdown services. The breakdown services go through every film and television script and break down every character with a capsule description, which is where the word sassy for all the female characters comes from. I've never seen a white sassy character in the breakdowns. Actors aren't allowed to see this, and all roles are assumed to be white unless it says black, Asian, Latino, which means that very few agents or managers who pay highly to get the breakdown services are going to submit their actors of color unless it says that, because they also are assuming that they will get a call and say, what the heck, if they submit their quote-unquote ethnic actors for roles that said nothing, because those are assumed to be white. And so that kind of cycles rather down than up. So when someone like a Lupita Nyong'o or a Viola Davis or a Lou Gossett wins an award, it's hard to get rid of that many decades old mindset of, but it doesn't say a black role.
But yet we've had black presidents in the movies and on TV long before we really had a black president.
Not that long before. And also, that is where when you get to be a star like a Sam Jackson, you can play someone who evaluates grand instruments in the red violin that probably wasn't a black role. But for women...
And that was a great movie. I really liked that movie.
It was.
I mean, for women, they had done a survey that said that the Screen Actors Guild found that people who worked the most were white males. After that, the percentage was black males who got to be the sidekick of the white male. Then there were white females who got to be a love interest or girlfriend of the white male. And maybe there was a trickle down to the black female, but the black males weren't getting relationships. And that's still, those figures, even as it applies to Academy Award winners of color, look at Cuba Gooding. They don't get the opportunities because the mindset is so knee-jerk. It's so unconscious.
Have you seen the new TV program on Channel 7? It's about a white female doctor. And her boyfriend is a black guy.
I love that. No, what series is that?
It's called Black Box.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. She looks
She's a super-duper shrink.
Of course, it also means that she needs to be bipolar and taking her meds in order to qualify for a black boyfriend. Because what I love about her is that she's crazy.
And she sees a shrink also.
Right. It's a brand new show.
And, yeah, it's been on only 2 weeks.
Well, I have a question. My experience has only been New York and Los Angeles. And my neighborhoods I've lived in have been totally integrated. You know, where blacks, whites, Latinos are all interfacing on a daily basis. I don't know so much in the Midwest or different parts of the country whether there's so much integration, whether there's like a black section, a white section, a Jewish section, a Christian section, and they don't interrelate, and they don't mingle. Over here, we expect everybody to mingle.
And yet then it becomes a matter of, does the media follow the masses and continue misogyny, homophobia, segregation, or does the media, even though it is on the coasts, lead? I mean, you see younger people mingling across all kinds of lines. So the talk as far as Lupita has been media is behind where society is, because young women of all races admire her style and her intelligence. But the media seems to be behind that as far as wanting to cast her in simply a role, because society is there. Young people are there.
I'm wondering what her next role is going to be. I understand it's amazing. She just won the Best Supporting Actress Oscar for a fantastic performance in 12 Years a Slave. And I understand her next job is going to be a character in The Jungle Book.
She is doing a voiceover character in Jungle Book. That is her first booked job.
Well, you know, and there's the problem, I think a big problem. And, you know, Lou Gossett faced it. I think Octavia Spencer and all of the actors that have won, black actors that have won.
Right, but Lou Gossett was actually in another era, you know.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he came, I don't know if you read the book.
Wait a minute, he went to Lincoln High School in Brooklyn.
Right, right.
he lived in Coney Island.
Point of
interest. But he had a book, An Officer and an Actor.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
No,
yeah.
I know the book.
Right, and he talks about the first time, actually, he was in Beverly Hills, and he made the mistake of leaving the Beverly Hills Hotel and walking.
And they jacked him up.
Right.
And, you know, up against the tree.
Right, yeah. Why are you here? Why are you walking in Beverly Hills?
Right. And it was, you're right.
I mean, casing the hotel.
Right, right, exactly.
But again, that was a different era.
Absolutely. That's why it's so disappointing that now this same conversation for a phenomenon like Lupita is happening. The same conversation.
The Robert Laurie question. The actress Zoe Saldana.
Yeah.
Right.
She's black, right?
She's mixed.
Mixed.
Blackish.
Okay. Now, she's been in a lot of roles. I mean, I see her, lots of times. She played in the movie Avatar, which was big. And I've seen her in so many different roles.
And opposite white leading men.
She works a lot.
Yeah,
she works a lot. She's also a wonderful actress, and she's beautiful. She's a gorgeous woman. She's one of those actresses, and I think that Gugu
Mbatha-Raw,
who is starring in the movie Belle that we talked about, is another one of those.
You
actresses.
Have trouble pronouncing those indigenous.
Yeah, very, very difficult.
Well, is Gugu she the featured or is she the star of the movie?
She is the title role.
Okay. Yeah, it's the title role.
I have a really mundane question. Do you think her roles and her career would be enhanced if she had a more Americanized or anglicized name?
Oh, no, she's already had an NBC series, Undercovers,
with
Boris Cujo. When it comes to Zoe Saldana, I think that in society and on screen, Asian women and light-skinned black women get to be honorary white actresses and have a relationship with a white leading man. So even though, as a friend of ours, a mutual friend, Francesca Miller, made the point that you could see during the award season, you know, people like Matt Damon and pretty much every white actor that she ran across, you could tell that they would do a project with her.
Right.
That there was chemistry, and it wasn't a racial or jungle fever chemistry. It was chemistry. If the project were put together and producers would go for it, that they didn't have a problem having a noticeably black love interest.
Well, I think the most important thing is the story.
Well, the important thing
is the story.
I
mean, there's so much stuff that gets made that is pure garbage. It doesn't go in the movie theater. It goes straight to TV, okay?
Straight to video. Anyway,
straight
guys,
to video.
It's time for a break. You're listening to The View from Over Here, heard on CRN Digital Talk Radio and carried on the World Wide Web at crntalk.com. And you can hear all back shows at www.viewfromoverhere.com, plus contact us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hi there. We are back. This is Stan Weisleder on CRNTalk.com. The show is The View from Over Here.
And hopefully we have Rita McKenzie, who disappeared earlier. Rita, are you there?
I'm here now.
All right. How do you do, Rita?
Hi.
Okay. Oh, yes. What do you have to say about your new CD?
It's not that new. Thanks for asking.
It's new to me.
Well, I mean, you know, that's the show that we do.
Right. Tell us about the show. You did something this weekend, didn't you, in New York?
No, I'm doing something this weekend. I'm participating in a tribute to Julie Stein at the Public Theater. So that's what I'm part of, a Broadway group of people that's participating in it. So
Who else is there? You do a Ethel Merman?
I do an Ethel Merman show, but Liza Minnelli is coming, and Dee Hody, and Carol Lee Carmelo. These are all Broadway people. And we're doing a tribute to Julie Stein for breast cancer. So, yeah, so I'm here in the city. I go back and forth.
Julie was a great guy. I can chime in, right?
This is Robert Hooks, who is one of our correspondents.
Yeah, Julie and I did Hallelujah Baby together.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And he also did the music for Arturo Uy. Hallelujah Baby, it was Julie and I.
Well, Leslie Uggams will be there,
yes,
so indeed. That's right.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, I just thought I'd mention that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's good.
Julie Stein have a building at, I think it's UCLA or USC?
Might.
That's the Eye Institute.
The Eye Institute.
It's another Stein.
Another Stein? I thought it was the same one.
There are a lot of Steins
around.
You
know more than I do about that.
You have Steins and Steins. I knew a guy in high school. He said, well, we have Steins and we have Steins. I said, which one are you? He said, I'm a Stein.
Yeah. That's funny.
So after this, what is your agenda? Are you going to take the show?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to London with the show. I'm not sure exactly when, but yes, London is called. And, you know, we do the show all over the country.
Are you going to be in Los Angeles? We're Los Angeles based.
I'm Los Angeles based, but I have an apartment in New York also. I mean, I've been doing the show since 1987. So,
when you go to London, will you be appearing before the King and Queen or whatever they call themselves?
No, I did that already.
Oh, okay.
Believe it or not, at the end of the World War II celebration, which was in 1995, 10 American stars went over. Ethel Merman was dead. So they asked me to go, and we did a show for the Queen. And so I have already done that, and I have met the Queen. So, yes. But this time, no, I won't be meeting the Queen. Nope.
But the one anecdote I know about Ethel Merman is supposedly when she was on Broadway, they closed the doors, and you still could hear her out in the streets.
Yeah, that's what
she
they
had
used to say.
Blasting voice. Is your voice like that?
Sure.
You sound like you have a strong voice.
But I do 23 songs in the show, and I do six costume changes. So I'm a busy lady. Once I get going, you know, it's a big show.
I can imagine. Did you have a website that our listeners could go
sure.
to?
Of course, EthelMermansBroadway.com. Mm-hmm. That's the website.
And do you have a CD? And you have a CD out there that can be purchased through there?
Yes. Definitely. Yep.
Oh, fantastic. By the way, how did you pick on Ethel Merman?
Listen to her voice.
Yeah.
Was it
natural or
No. I fell into that. I always wanted to be Julie Andrews. I mean, that's, you know, growing up, you know, she was, you know, the ingenue, got the guy, and I thought that would be a great idea. But whenever I was cast, it was always, you know, in one of the roles, you know, either a comic role or I guess I was doing Babe and Pajama Game, and the reviewer said, wow, she's like a young Ethel Merman. And I thought, oh, God, that's not good. Because Ethel was alive at the time, you know. And I guess it just happened after she died. My writing partner said, you know, we should put something together. Because I was going up for Broadway shows, but I didn't have any credits. And he said, we've got to get you on the board. You know, we've got to let people see you. So he said, let's find a show. Let's write a show. And he said, let's do a show about Ethel Merman. I said, oh, no, I don't want to do that. So anyway, he talked me into it. And the first time we did it in 1987, you know, people came. And, you know, it started to appear in the Times, and all kinds of things happened after that. And it's just been
what year did she pass away in?
84.
So you came along at the right time, a good replacement.
I guess so. I mean, I never wanted to replace her. You know, and I figured it would be six performances and over, but it just has not been that way.
It's a six performances and 25 years later.
And she has such
a
great fan base.
As they say, four bars and off. Annie Miller used to say that, you know. But I've done other things, a lot of other things.
Anyway, reader, our time is up.
Okay.
When you when you come into L.A., we'd love to have you in the studio.
And you can sing to us.
What's that?
And you can sing to us while in the studio.
Right. I don't know if they say, but break a leg.
Oh, thanks.
And thanks very much for coming on the show. You're listening to The View from Over Here, heard on CRN Digital Talk Radio and carried on the World Wide Web at crntalk.com. And stay tuned, and we'll be speaking to...
Here's something you don't hear on the radio every day. Someone who can't see.
Okay, we are back. This is Stan Weisleder on The View from Over Here on crntalk.com. I'm in the studio with Malcolm Berman, our special regular guests, Robert Hooks and Laurie Marlowe. And our guest right now is Stephen Baldwin and Christopher Sean Shaw.
Sean Shaw, that's a tongue twister.
Yes. Stephen, are you there?
It's just Stephen. That's pretty simple.
Oh, it's just Stephen?
Okay. So, Christopher...
I was having fun with you.
Well, that's what most people do. They pull my leg and other parts as well.
Okay.
Anyway, I understand that Robert Hooks knows you from some past early life.
How are you, Stephen? It's Robert... It's Robert Hooks. We worked together on Fled, which Kevin directed.
How are you, brother?
I'm just fine. I'm fine, Stephen. It's good to hear you, buddy.
My gosh, great to hear you. You sound well.
Yeah, we're in the studio talking about the entertainment industry, and I heard that Stephen Baldwin was going to be on. I said, that's my man. I know Stephen. Get out of here.
Hey, Stephen, why don't you tell us about that movie that you just made or is coming out? And we were discussing it before. Is it anything like based on the life of Marjo Gortner?
Well, I would have to defer that to Christopher to respond to that one. He's the brains behind this thing. I'm just one of the actors.
Okay, so you have no brains. Okay, that's like me. I have no brains either. That's what my wife says. She says to me, "How can you be so stupid? Why are you so stupid? I told you that's the way to do it. You don't listen to me." I get that all the time.
Well, anyway,
Chris, my wife is Brazilian, and she just says to me, "Oh, you're so American."
What's the movie, Stephen?
I'll let you tee it up, Chris. Go ahead.
Sure. The movie is called Youth Group. It's not filmed yet. We're actually in the fundraising phase, and we actually have a live crowdfunding show planned for this Friday night at the Creation Museum in Northern Kentucky. It's called A Night of Comedy and Short Films Fundraiser, and we're going to have Stephen there and Christian comedians, and we're going to reveal a little trailer we put together for the project, but it's not filmed yet.
What's this story about?
Youth Group is about a youth pastor who's kind of an older youth pastor, played by Thor Ramsey, and he strays away from his calling to get an endorsement, a book endorsement from a megachurch pastor. So he goes for a job at that church so he can be near that megachurch pastor, and he actually ends up falling for the senior pastor's eldest daughter. So what could possibly go wrong? Well, just about
everything. While you're talking about religion or religious matters, have you seen the show Book of Mormon?
I have not.
Have you heard about it?
Of course.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm very aware of it. I live in New York, and I know it. I know all about it pretty well.
Well, going back to what we were talking about, there was a documentary on this evangelistic preacher, Marjo Gortner. And Marjo, I think, became a preacher when he was like a...
He was a little kid.
Before he was a teenager, you know, he was like a Michael Jackson type of character. And he said eventually... Wow. And he said eventually he took his movements on the pulpit. He imitated Mick Jagger. And he would go around, and he would reveal how he really wasn't sincere about what he was doing, and eventually became an actor. So that story reminded me of your story.
I'm pretty sure I saw that documentary several years ago, probably over a decade or two. Ago.
Probably something in the 70s.
Yeah, I think I did see that. No, this isn't like that at all. This is about sincere believers in Jesus Christ. They just have some certain peculiar methodologies and strategies to get
Let me jump in there, Chris, really quick, because Robert, the thing that's very interesting in the concept of youth group that kind of got me interested was everybody's doing this Twitter stuff,
right?
And somebody had sent me a tweet. I don't even know if it was you, Chris, or who it was. But somebody sent me a tweet with a video link to like a little teaser trailer to this concept these guys had for this thing called youth group.
Right.
And, you know, I've been doing mostly faith-based stuff in the last 6 years and really kind of itching and trying to find stuff that was kind of cool and fun and different, you know, not any of this stuff that's, you know, from my perception, I'm somebody coming out of Hollywood getting into the faith-based stuff as far as making movies and all that.
Right.
A lot of it's that pretty cheesy, conservative kind of stuff, and it just didn't speak to me so much.
Right.
What Thor and Chris have put together is really something from that perspective is, first of all, very funny. It's authentically funny stuff that they've written in the story and the screenplay and all of that.
Right.
And what's interesting is it does this thing where it has fun with the humanity of these people and these Christians and the pastor and the youth pastor. There's one great scene in the movie where the youth pastor's in a meeting with the senior pastor and the gorgeous daughter walks in and like hands a slip of paper to her dad, but the youth pastor's in the meeting. He doesn't know it's the daughter. So she walks out of the room, and all of a sudden he goes, well, listen, I don't want to get in any trouble here, but is anybody going to talk about how gorgeous that girl was? And he's like, it's my daughter. It's youth group is one of the first Christian comedies, and I've read a lot of them in the last 5 years, that isn't afraid to like walk the edge a little bit, but not cross the line in any way that would not be authentic to our faith or what we believe. And all of what I just said is very timely right now, Robert. If you look at these faith-based films, you look at this film, God Is Not Dead, that's out right now.
Yeah.
It was made for $1 million. It's done $40 million.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing.
On 1,500 screens.
This project appears to be coming at it from another angle, and I like the fact that there's humor there.
Well,
your project,
but you have that humor in that Book of Mormon thing.
Oh,
but
yeah,
that went over the edge, I think.
Yeah, but that, you know, that's are they doing a movie out of that? Because that's a Broadway play, and a lot of people just don't get. Stephen does, because you're in New York, Stephen.
Yeah, the Book of Mormon on Broadway is a smash hit.
Big hit.
But it's Trey Parker and the other guy. Who are those guys, Chris? Trey Parker.
Oh, yeah.
And they do,
the South Park guys.
South Park.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
So that should be pretty outrageous.
That's outrageous humor there. Christopher, how are you going about Christopher? How are you going to go about raising the budget for this film?
Well, aside from traditional investments, which we're looking into, we're embarking on live comedy shows that are a live crowd fund to bring some people comedy, show them the trailer that we did, and help have them pitch in that way.
Small investments as well as any large investments?
Correct.
How much are you looking to raise in the aggregate?
A million and a half.
That's not bad. That's
not bad at all.
Yeah.
Have you gone to any of the church groups? I don't know whether they contribute to this type of theme.
We're working on that.
Yeah.
Hey, Stephen, I have a question for you. You have a whole bunch of brothers in the same business as you. Do you guys get along all the time when you meet? If you meet, like, for family dinners?
Absolutely, and until we start talking about Jesus.
I know what you mean. We've heard those stories before. But when we worked together and fled down south, and Kevin and I talked about it afterwards, then when you made the kind of transition to go into that other direction, which I'm happy if you're happy, but we kind of miss you going out. I remember the experiences that we had just doing the film with Lawrence and with Selma and Kevin, of course, at the helm. Was really a lot of fun.
Oh, are you kidding me? Let me tell you something. Lawrence Fishburne now, he rides all over Los Angeles on all his big fancy motorcycles. Who got him on the motorcycle? Stephen Baldwin.
Well, my question is on the commercial. Why is he wearing those sunglasses that it's like a mirror?
Well, I see that's all the takeoff.
What's supposed to be the meaning of
it's
that?
It's all a takeoff from that. What's the film? The
Blade?
Film. No, the film that he did with
Matrix.
Yes, right, exactly, and people remember him from that. But I want to talk about Stephen now because you're in L.A. You're in New York, but you still have a place in L.A. as well, right?
No, I don't. I did for a little while, but I'm back over here. My kids, Robert, are my two daughters are 21 and 18 now.
My goodness!
Wow,
what?
I'm having to stay real close.
Yeah, I can understand. You know, Kevin's youngest daughter is just left Cornell, just graduated Cornell, and is going to go to USC and become a big lawyer in the industry.
Well, he's going to need one.
That's my wife cackling in the background. But what a pleasant surprise. Coming in today just to sit down and do our segment of Stan's show to hear that you were going to be on with Christopher. I think that's great. And I want to personally wish you guys much luck getting this film together because it sounds just what you've described sounds kind of interesting. And I know if Christopher's involved in it, it's got to be good, right?
Now, on raising money, have you guys thought about going to, I think it's called Indiegogo?
Yes, we have. We are looking into that option as well. We're looking at multiple options to raise the funds.
Because there are several places like that, or organizations.
Yeah, Kickstarter, Indiegogo.
Right, exactly.
Well, Stan, do you have an extra few hundred thousand dollars to contribute?
Oh, yeah, it's in my back pocket. Just let me dig it out.
Yeah, we could get the ball rolling with $200K or $300K.
Yeah, Stan before in another life was an actuary. And he speaks to people who have money. So
yeah, but they don't talk to me. I talk to them.
How do the listener for this particular show, how do they, if they were interested in investing in your project, how would they go about it?
Well, first, if they're anywhere near Northern Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana, check out our Night of Comedy and Short Films fundraiser at Legacy Hall Creation Museum. 7:30 p.m. Friday night. You can go to itickets.com and just search Stephen's name, Stephen Baldwin, or search Night of Comedy. You'll find the link there. Or you can call 1-800-965-9324.
By the way, the contract that you signed to be on the show provides us with 10% of whatever you raise.
I thought it's 15.
Oh, no, this 10, that,
you lowered it for them?
This is my producer's hat, not as my co-host hat.
Oh.
Yeah.
What do you think about that, Stephen?
No problem. We accept.
Hey, yeah, listen, 10% of $1 million.
Million and a half. I think it's a good budget. Million and a half. Used to be called low budgets, but... Now, I don't know. You
could, I remember when I was a kid, they have on TV what they would call the million-dollar movie. You can't even make a commercial for less than
Well, you can. I think Christopher knows. You can make a movie for $1.5 million.
Yeah, you absolutely can, and you can do a really good job with
it. If you don't pay anyone.
Stephen's going to probably get half of that.
But I think it was Edward Norton or one of the actors of that ilk who just made a movie for about $400,000 or $500,000, and he had a handheld camera.
Well, yeah, now the cameras, right. The cameras these days, I'm sure Christopher knows this. I mean, you can shoot a movie for $1.5 million. That's a pretty decent budget. That's what low budget films are doing these days.
I've heard of people that are using Canons or Nikons that have the movie capabilities,
yeah. And they make very, very good film too.
Yeah, let me tell
you something, guys. There are college students making movies with their iPhones.
Yeah. Right. Mm. No, he's right.
It can be as simple as that. And really, a tremendous goal here on the part of youth group, this Christian comedy, is we want this thing to be as excellent as anything else out there. So really, and you know this, Robert, there's only so low you can go within the production value for it to really be... You know, to have that level of excellence. So that's also what we're shooting for here with Youth Group.
Right.
Can you tell us real quickly, once you get the project done, how do you propose to market it or get it to the public?
Well, there's 101 ways to skin a cat now. I mean, if you have your own P&A or marketing and distribution funds yourself, you can completely do an independent distribution plan, which is what they just did with this God Is Not Dead project, which, Robert, so you know, it's starring Kevin Sorbo. You remember him. He's
of course.
Been around forever.
Guys, if you could hang on for a few minutes, because we want to catch you again at the end of our break.
You got it.
Okay, you're listening to The View from Over Here, heard on CRN Digital Talk Radio and carried on the World Wide Web at CRNTalk.com. Stay tuned, and we'll be back with Steve and Chris.
We are back for our final segment on The View from Over Here. In the studio, Malcolm Berman, Robert Hooks, and Laurie Marlowe. Stephen Baldwin and his associate, what's his name again?
Christopher.
They're
Christopher
gone
Sean
now.
Shaw.
Okay, Christopher Sean Shaw.
Anyway, we only have a few short minutes, guys. Tell us where we could reach you again. Your email.
What's that?
Tell us your website.
Yeah, how do we reach you guys? You guys have a website or what? Where do we get a hold of you?
Facebook page?
Yes.
Home telephone number?
Facebook, you can do filmmaker Christopher Sean Shaw. You can email me, directorcss@icloud.com.
Hey, Chris, I have to tell you, when I first tried to look you up on the internet, I put in Christopher Sean, and you know what I got? I got a black dude with dreadlocks, and I said, geez, that's the producer? And then somebody, no, you have to put in Shaw also.
That's right. Mm.
Well, I personally want to wish you guys a lot of luck with the project.
Yeah, and by the way, number one, if you're ever in L.A., you know, we'd love to have you on the show live.
Yeah, none of this telephone nonsense.
And we'd love for you to check in to, see how you're doing.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much.
Stephen, Take care of yourself.
Yeah, buddy. Guys. Hey, God bless you guys. Thanks, Stan. Thanks a lot, Robert. You guys, thank you very much. And you're looking out for youth group, guys.
And stay in touch.
You bet, Stephen.
Stay in touch. Even when you become famous and are on top of the world, remember us poor people down on the bottom.
He is famous already.
I mean, famous. More famous than his other brothers.
Oh, you just started an argument.
No, actually, Stephen is the only Baldwin I ever worked with, but I admire them all.
Thanks again for being on the show. Anyway, guys, it's time to wrap it up for this week.
How much time do we have, Malcolm?
I don't know. How much time do we have, Paul? He's getting his notes out. We have 60 seconds. We have 30 seconds. I don't know.
Real quickly, I know Lori and Robert, you guys saw the new movie, Belle.
Yes, yes.
Tell us quickly, how do you recommend it to our listeners?
Oh, absolutely, Lori.
So very highly. The ad campaign makes it appear as if it's a Jane Austen-esque kind of women's movie, but it is a legal thriller. It intertwines a personal story of a mixed-race girl who was rescued from slavery and put into her rightfully upper-class British background with a legal test of slavery, the Zange ship. Are humans cargo or are they humans?
Yeah, you don't get any of that from the trailer.
Belle is a legal thriller.
Anyway, guys, I'm sorry we're going to have to cut you short because it's the end of the show. And I don't know whether we're scheduled for next week or not, but we'll talk about that after and let the people know.
It's always great to be with you guys.
And you make great coffee. Yeah.
and I'm in love with Belle. I saw her picture in...
Oh, yes. And it's Google a wonderful film.
I'm in love. Don't tell my wife, but she doesn't listen to the show. Anyway, guys, thanks for joining us. You're listening to The View from Over Here, heard on CRN Digital Talk Radio and carried on the World Wide Web at crntalk.com. And you can listen to us at www.viewfromoverhere.com. And we won't see you next week, but we'll speak to you next week.
I'll be here next week.
No, we'll speak to them, but we won't see them. Actually, they
Okay.
They can see us. We can't see them. Anyway, have a good week. See you then. Bye.
The View from Over Here is a co-production of Infinity X and TBG International. For further information, contact Malcolm Berman at 818-687-2784. That's 818-687-2784.